910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, the Democratic National Convention. I'm Daria Albinger. This third night of the convention will focus on vice presidential nominee Tim Walz. And in a matter of hours from now, the governor of Minnesota will deliver what could very well be the most important speech of his life. Here's ABC's Terry Moran.
Just as Republicans like to feature black voters who support Donald Trump, black speakers who support Donald Trump, to kind of break the stereotype that's somehow not permitted to black voters. So, too, I think Democrats are happy with the selection of Tim Walz, a small-town guy who taught in a small town. He opens the door to perhaps voters in those counties, in those areas of the country, to consider something different than they have done before.
Delegates will also hear from former President Clinton, and at least one Republican will speak this evening, the former Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, Jeff Duncan. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
The Brewers beat the Cards. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers with a 3-2 win over the Cardinals in St. Louis. Right-hander Frankie Montas pitched 7 innings, allowing the Cardinals just one hit. Manager Pat Murphy.
Frankie was great. He attacked the zone. Strike one was big. I don't know what the percentage was, but I bet it was really good. He's turned it up a notch, you know, and it's kind of cool. He gets it. Yeah, it's nice having his experience.
The series continues tonight. The Badgers women's volleyball team kicked off the season last night by beating Bradley 3-0 in an exhibition match. Wisconsin beginning the season ranked 3rd in the nation. NFL, after missing most of training camp with a hip injury, the Packers' second-round pick Edgerrin Cooper is happy to be back at practice.
Best feeling ever. I think that was the longest I've been without playing football, so, and just missing out and stuff like that. So it was mentally tough. Sometimes things happen, but it's about being a pro. You just have to do what you could do.
As rookie linebacker Edgerrin Cooper with sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low around 50. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, a high in the upper 70s. Chance of showers and storms tomorrow night in early Friday, then clearing Friday afternoon and a high around 80. Heating up into the weekend, well into the 80s. Right now it's 73.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. They put out fake AI photos of
Taylor Swift saying that she endorsed him.
Right. And Trump retweeted that. And of course, all of that is untrue.
Don't mess with the Swifties. You'll have my daughters showing up.
I mean, it's a whole new level of Swift boating.
Trump and Las Vegas might get Swift boated, all right. Taylor Swift boated.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
There's danger out there. It lurks on highways and quiet neighborhood streets. It's more likely to kill you than a shark and more terrifying than the biggest snake. Distracted driving claims lives every day. Every notification, swipe, social post, video, or selfie while driving risks your life. So while you might think public speaking or the zombie apocalypse is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, this is Aaron, Todd's producer. Join us on our next show for the last day of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, live with Trigvi Olsen and more. It's going to be a party. Don't miss it.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Schwabba.
For sure.
This is a Civic Media News special report. Everything you need to know live from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Now, your host, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell.
From the United Center, good evening. I'm Terry Bell, and welcome to night 3 of our coverage of the Democratic National Convention. I'm joined by Earl Ingram, my friend, my colleague, and this week my housemate, and we'll be getting you caught up about everything going on tonight and recap some things that happened yesterday that were important. Earl, welcome to the broadcast.
Well, thank you very much, man. I'm honored to have an opportunity to sit here and exchange some thoughts and dialogues with you and the audience.
There is a lot to talk about today, but let's start with last night, because things were just getting started in Milwaukee when this broadcast was on, and it seems to have exceeded expectations what happened in Milwaukee last night. The attendance estimate went from 15,000 now to 18,000, and the city seems energized, and that's important for any candidate that wants to carry Wisconsin.
So that doesn't surprise me one bit. When Kamala Harris' name was first mentioned, and the people who that I'm around in the city, the organization that is right now in place, the last time I saw something that could come even close was the first time that Barack Obama ran for president. And so young people have taken the bull by the horns. They're organized, they're working hard, especially in the black community, they're covering areas that haven't been covered since Barack Obama ran for office. So I'm really excited about what's taking place.
It seems Kamala Harris has an opportunity that Hillary Clinton was not able to capitalize on, that Joe Biden was not to be able to capitalize on. And that is, you know, the black vote in Milwaukee. And we've seen the turnout from the last few races. There's an opportunity to turn recent trends around this year.
Well, there are two different reasons. I mean, it's not just the fact that, you know, that there are blacks who are supporting her. There are black women. And black women who the Soros and those kinds of places are organized, working really hard. Women are organized. Whenever women are organized, it's kind of hard to stop them. They're a juggernaut, and that's exactly what's taking place now.
And then here at the United Center in Chicago last night, the big event, Michelle and Barack Obama addressing the nation and the two gatherings, the one in Chicago and the one in Milwaukee. And it felt like old times. I had never really seen, it seems like a long time since I've seen the Obamas on this big of a stage. And the energy was just off the charts.
Well, you know, it's not just the Obamas, man. I mean, if you look at the list of speakers that the Democratic Party has organized and lined up the first night, last night, tonight, tomorrow. It's unprecedented. It's unparalleled. You know, former presidents Barack and Michelle Obama, President Obama and the First Lady,
yeah.
Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton hasn't spoken publicly in a while. President Joe Biden and his wife. I mean, they're lining up people that are still fresh in the minds of many of the Democrats and very well respected and honored people. And so when they bring those people out, and you contrast that, we were at the Republican convention, you contrast that with the people that the Republicans brought out, it pale in comparison.
There have been a lot of comparisons of the gravitas of the speakers here and there. One thing that sticks out to me, too, is the people who are conspicuous by their absence in Milwaukee were the Bushes. Were any previous Republican administrations. You don't see them throwing their support behind that ticket.
Well, I mean, you know, Donald Trump burnt bridges with the Republican Party that people once knew. And he certainly changed that. It's the MAGA Party in many instances. And those remaining Republicans who are part of that Bush legacy is, you know, they're in the background. They're certainly not willing to step up and support Donald Trump. I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to go through with the vote, if they're going to fall on the sword and say we're still all Republicans. We got to fight for what we believe in as Republicans, but they're certainly not going to do it publicly.
Other things were happening in Chicago outside the convention but connected to the convention. Late last night, about 200 protesters took part in a rally at the Israeli consulate. The group was called Behind Enemy Lines. They did not have a permit for that protest, but Chicago Police Superintendent allowed that protest to proceed anyway. There were several arrests. Officers say they only moved in after they were attacked. And when asked about the arrest, Superintendent Snelling said that three journalists were among those arrested. And in Chicago, to be a journalist outside of this convention covering protests in the street, you have to have a special credential. And if you don't have that credential, you risk being arrested. I don't know if this sets a good precedent, Earl, about police arresting journalists. The police maintained that, you know, the journalists were just simply not where they were supposed to be. And even though they have a story to cover, that they should retreat. And I know journalists would push back on that notion quite a bit. But, you know, the protests have been making their presence known. I don't get a sense that inside this perimeter that people are necessarily, that it's not cast a big shadow over the proceedings here.
Well, there's protests going on as we speak, and they'll continue to be protests as long as, you know, the numbers that they say of the Palestinians who have lost their lives is somewhere around 40,000. That's the number that they give. But if you talk to people who are in the know, they say it's more like 120,000. And so when you look at women and children who are being slaughtered in the United Nations that totally disagrees with the policy that's taking place, you kind of understand people are willing to fight against that. And it's man's inhumanity to man continues unabated. And so it's a dangerous time in more ways than one. It certainly is dangerous for Kamala Harris and how she handles this situation. The protesters aren't going away. And whether or not she'll be held accountable for it or not, I don't know. I hope not. She didn't create the situation. And she didn't make the calls and decisions that have been made. And so she is not calling the shots now. She's not the president. She's running for president. We've got to get people to understand to try to force her to make a decision that she has no jurisdiction to make on what happens in this war with Gaza and the Palestinians.
I'm Terry Bell. My co-host tonight is Earl Ingram. I'm sorry, early. I stepped on your
No, you're fine.
There. Okay. Well, anyway, I was just curious to know, among the speakers, I believe right now, Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson is speaking to the convention. It's historic. Yeah, it would seem that that is happening quite soon. So we've got a TV monitor. Thank you so much, Chris Casper, for pointing that out. That should be happening momentarily. I understand, Earl, you know, you have some thoughts on Mayor Johnson and his role tonight at the convention.
Well, I've watched Mayor Johnson from the time he was a very young man who came into then Mayor Tom Barrett's office. Very bright, intelligent young man who clearly has a degree from UW-Madison. And so he's certainly a young man that you could see had success written all over him. I supported him as mayor, and will say that I'm a little concerned that it appears that Mayor Johnson is looking to wind up with a role in Kamala Harris's, White House presidency if she makes it that far.
And that's not a notion that necessarily pleases you, though.
Well, because I supported him, and I'm watching children in my community, the blood is running in the street. 12, 13-year-old boys are dying every night, every other night. Children are being killed. And so guns and gun plays are ravishing our neighborhoods and our communities. And I think that, self-aggrandizement and moving to the next level politically is fine, but none of that should supersede the fact that children are dying in our communities at record pace, on a record pace and record numbers. The children's blood is running in the street, and he's the mayor. And so the mayor has a responsibility to address those issues. I'm not saying that he's not addressing them totally, but I just think that, when you're spending a lot of time away from the city at a time that this does not get any better.
There's another speaker tonight, the keynote speaker, and that is Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's running mate. We've seen a bit of him. This might be the nation's first extended exposure to him. And there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not he'll even use a teleprompter. He seems more prone to speaking off the cuff. I think he may have given his first speech from a teleprompter yesterday or the day before. So this is fairly new territory for him. What do you want to hear from Tim Walz?
Well, first off, I guess I have to tell you about teleprompters and my belief. I've never supported teleprompters because I think when you get to a certain level politically, you should be able to function as a person who understands what's at stake and what your plans are, what you're going to do. And so when people write those things for you and you read those answers, I don't know how much that is of you or if it's the makings of somebody whose visions and beliefs are different than yours. I understand it's a safe way to do things, but I've never been a supporter of teleprompters.
What have your thoughts been about Tim Walz up to this point?
He's a good guy. I mean, initially when they made the selection, I thought it was the right selection because he's a humanitarian. You can feel the humanism in him, and that's not bad. Right. I mean, that's part of what's needed in government is somebody who looks at things from a humanistic point of view. It's too much of the other thing. And so it's refreshing to see a man who sees it from the perspective of what's in the best interest of people and places people above all else.
Tim Walz will be the keynote speaker tonight. This is night three of the Democratic National Convention from Chicago. You're listening to Civic Media Special Coverage. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media Network News Director. I'm joined by Earl Ingram, host of The Earl Ingram Show, heard on many Civic Media stations from 8 to 10 weekday mornings. And Earl, it's a pleasure to have you with me. What are your We're going to hold that thought. We have a very special guest coming up right after this break. She's Jennifer McClellan. She's the first black woman elected to Congress from the state of Virginia. And we'll hear from her right after this.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. When money people talk about retirement plans, they'll usually start talking about 401ks. But if you are one of the 57 million Americans who doesn't have a retirement plan from your job, I worked in restaurants for a long time, so I know, retirement planning can seem mysterious. I know it really did for me. That's why today I'm talking about target date funds. That's the retirement tool that I use when I did not have a job with a 401k. I chose an investment fund with a target date. For me, it was the year I'm going to retire, when I turn 65. And then I started putting money in the account, and the fund adjusts my investments over time moving from higher return but riskier things to less risky things as my retirement date approaches. The hardest part of retirement investing is getting started. I hope this helps. For more money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio. You're listening to a Civic Media News special report. Everything you need to know from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Once again, your host, Civic Media News Director, Terry Bell.
Welcome back, and we're especially pleased to welcome Congresswoman Jennifer McClellan to the show. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
This is a Wisconsin-based show. Much of our audience lives in Wisconsin. For anyone watching or listening who's not familiar, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell our audience a little bit about you.
So I am Congresswoman Jennifer McClellan. I was elected as the first Black woman from Virginia to Congress. Before that, I spent 18 years in our state legislature, and more importantly to your audience, I was in Wisconsin on Saturday campaigning for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz all day before coming over here to Chicago.
And you, like, as you mentioned, you were the first Black woman represented from the state of Virginia.
Yeah.
And we were talking a bit before we came back, and it is amazing after all this time that, you know, we are still blazing trails and still establishing firsts, even in the 21st century.
It really blows my mind. And you know, Virginia was the birthplace of American democracy, but it was also the birthplace of American slavery, and it was a month apart. The first, we have the oldest continuing legislature that was founded in July of 1619. And then in August, the first recorded Africans came to our shores and were traded for goods. And it, you know, Virginia was also the birthplace of the idea of a government by and for the people. And yet the story of our nation has been, how do we make that true for everybody? So on the one hand, it is an extraordinary responsibility to be the first. And you know, I know I stand on the shoulders of my ancestors and my own family, but so many people that paved the way, like Shirley Chisholm, John Mercer Langston, who was the first Black man elected from Virginia in the same district that I serve in now. But it's a responsibility not to be the last.
You know, the amazing thing is that there's so many Black people who live in Virginia. Mm-hmm. It's not like Wisconsin where Blacks make up 5% of the population. That's not the case in Virginia. And so we've had a Black congresswoman for many years. The surprising thing to me is that it took so long in Virginia. Why?
Because, you know, in the South, after Reconstruction, where you had Blacks voting for Black men gain the right to vote in 1868 and created a ran for office, you had 100 Black men who were elected to the Virginia legislature during Reconstruction. At the end of Reconstruction, the old power guard came back and they disenfranchised Black men through state constitutions, through literacy tests, through poll taxes. They also used racial terror lynchings and propaganda of the Lost Cause narrative and Confederate iconography to put Black people back in their place. It was all the lie of white supremacy. That happened all throughout the South and the former Confederacy. And it took 100 years with the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act to begin to regain that power. But every time, particularly in the South, that Black people have gained social, political, and economic power, there's been backlash. And that's why it's taken so long.
So how celebratory has it been to the Black community, especially Black women and young girls, that you've been able to bridge that gap?
You know, I'll tell you, my predecessor passed away, and I came in a special election. It was a 1 week primary, the week before Christmas. We broke records for turnout in, it was a firehouse primary, and I went to polling places. People were in line all day, and they were joyful. They were excited to vote, and they knew, not only because I had, you know, spent 18 years in the state legislature and had a lot of accomplishments, but because we were going to break that glass ceiling. I see that same excitement happening now. Not only are we going to break the ultimate glass ceiling in the presidency, but we're going to do it with a candidate who is extraordinary and who is joyful. And I think it's an exciting parallel that I see myself in Kamala Harris.
Make the case that Kamala Harris is the best choice to be president of the United States.
Well, you know, she was a partner with President Biden in saving our economy, in responding to the COVID crisis after the former president was, you know, really saying all kinds of crazy things. They accomplished more together than most presidential administrations do in two terms. And she is ready to step in. But before that, she had a career, you know, as a prosecutor, as a state attorney general, as a United States senator. So she's way more qualified than Donald Trump was when he got elected president. She's way more qualified than J.D. Vance. And she will continue to focus on protecting our freedom, on building an economy that leaves no one behind, that addresses costs that a lot of people, even though the economy is doing a lot better, people are still paying too much for childcare or access to housing or a number of other things. And she's going to focus on addressing that, but she's bringing the joy and the hope back.
I assume you were in the arena last night.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, could you imagine many other candidates generating that kind of electricity?
You know, it's bigger. I was at the convention in 2008 when Barack Obama got the nomination. And that was electric. This is bigger. And it's bigger because in 2008, it was hope and history versus more of the same. And the differences between the Democrats and the Republicans weren't that stark. Now, with Donald Trump and MAGA Republicans, it's hope and history versus chaos and hatred and division. And it's Kamala Harris and Tim Walz who are focused on how can I help the American people and fighting for the American people, versus Donald Trump and J.D. Vance who are fighting for themselves.
So I'll also say to you that a lot of it is that the Democratic Party has certainly gone all in. I remember as well, when Hillary Clinton ran and was in a position that she possibly could have defeated Donald Trump then. And the Democratic Party did not invest the resources in the black community that they're investing now.
Yes.
And so part of all of it is based on the Democratic Party, who's now finally realizing that, yes, we can't just expect the black community.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the Biden-Harris campaign invested in black media, in field operations, in earlier than any other presidency. And I've been involved in politics since I was 18 years old, since 1992, showing you my age. And it was earlier than ever and in record numbers. And it's sustained and it's meeting voters where they are, not just with TV ads and not just with radio, but every medium possible, including like going to the barbershop, talking to people.
Jennifer McClellan, Congresswoman for Virginia, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us tonight.
Thank you.
We're going to bring in our panelists to analyze everything that's been happening today. Stay with us.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Yes. Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell, the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Vice President Kamala Harris's rally in battleground Wisconsin last night virtually doubled the DNC for a few hours. Here's Stuart J. Waddles.
An energized crowd of 15,000 that stood in line for hours greeted the top of the Democratic ticket at the Fiserv Forum.
Let us fight for the ideals we hold dear, and let us always remember when we fight, we win.
And Harris thanked the crowd for making her the nominee. Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
Harley Davidson says this week it's ending its diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. The Human Rights Campaign says the decision shows Harley doesn't care about equality in the workplace. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. A Burnett County man accused of fatally stabbing the mother of his child entered a no-contest plea to first-degree intentional homicide charges on Monday. David Edeburn Jr. of Grantsburg was accused of stabbing and killing 32-year-old Brittany Holland in the village of Siren nearly 1 year ago. Authorities say Holland had suffered so many wounds during the incident that she was covered in slashes, stabs, and had been partially decapitated. Edeburn Jr. is scheduled to be sentenced to prison on November 25th. Duluth Public Schools held its third annual Unity in Our Community event on Tuesday ahead of the new school year. According to a Northern News Now report, the yearly event aims to celebrate the end of summer and mark the beginning of the new school year for families. Students who attended the event were able to get vaccines, free backpacks and school supplies, and even some clothes donated by community partners. The event also gives families a chance to connect with their children's teachers and school staff before the new year starts. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. You can track the trajectory for my addiction if you gauge my weight from season to season. Those are the words of Matthew Perry from his book, Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing. Perry says when he was carrying weight, he was drinking, and when he was skinny, it was pills. And when he had a goatee, it was lots of pills. According to the New York Post, series producers Marta Kaufman and David Crane spoke to the Times of London about their process when they learned of Perry's addiction to drugs and alcohol. Crane said they asked Perry if he wanted to leave the show to deal with his substance issues, to which Perry replied, "No, this is really important to me." Perry said in his book that he estimates he spent roughly $9 million in an attempt to become sober. The late star also said that season 9 of Friends was the only season of the show he was fully sober for. Perry was found dead in his hot tub in October 23 from a ketamine overdose. His live-in assistant has recently been charged, along with four others, in connection to Perry's death. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low around 50. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, a high in the upper 70s. Chance of showers and storms tomorrow night in early Friday, then clearing Friday afternoon and a high around 80. Heating up into the weekend, well into the 80s. Right now it's 73.
As a federally licensed broadcast company, this Civic Media station is required by FCC regulations to accept advertising by all qualified candidates for federal office. We also accept ads from state and local candidates. We do screen announcements from issue groups and PACs and exercise discretion in airing announcements with blatantly false claims or outrageous unfounded statements. These announcements do not necessarily reflect the views of Civic Media, its hosts, or advertisers, and the source of all issue announcements can be found online at our FCC public file.
The Todd Alba Show.
Even Scott Walker and other Republicans are going apoplectic because Trump keeps melting down into these personal attacks. He's just off the rails, Trigby.
You know, Scott may not be the brightest man, but he knows what politics is. Donald Trump is never going to change. Scott, come on the show. We'll talk about it. Todd and I will be nice to you, and I won't make Badger Boy State jokes.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
Thursday morning from Chicago, we'll preview the big night for Kamala Harris as the vice president accepts the presidential nomination at the Democratic convention.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday morning starting at 6. You're listening to a Civic Media News special report. Everything you need to know from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Once again, your host, Civic Media News Director, Terry Bell.
Welcome back, and we're joined by our panelists now. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, and John Nichols of the Capital Times in Madison and the Nation. Guys, thanks for being with us tonight.
It's great to be with you, brother.
Thanks so much for having us.
So I know, Dan, you've only been in town a short time, but it's already been a bit of a whirlwind.
Absolutely. Well, I was in Milwaukee yesterday for the Harris Walls rally at Fiserv Forum. Energy there was just incredible. But yeah, I've been here in Chicago just for a little bit this afternoon here. I was able to attend an event earlier with Greta Neubauer talking about state legislative races around the country. And I was also just moments before I joined the show here, Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson just spoke on the DNC floor about some of the investments that the Biden-Harris administration has been making in infrastructure in the city of Milwaukee.
John, you've been here all week. What are some of your impressions of what's happening today?
Well, today's a pretty big day. Bill Clinton's going to speak, and it's going to be reminded that, you know, if you're far enough from being president, it doesn't matter that much. And especially if Tim Walz is speaking after you. And so, obviously, what we're up to right now is, the night where kind of the newest person on the national political scene, Tim Walz, certainly a big deal in Minnesota, but not known. You could have stopped 1,000 people on the street in New York. They wouldn't have been able to tell you, you know, a month ago, is going to be in this incredible space. So I've been spending a lot of time talking today to people who know him well. Like Keith Ellison, the Attorney General up in Minnesota, folks like that. David Hogg from the gun control advocacy, who's been a big advocate for him. And, you know, there's a general sense that he's ready for it, that he will nail it in this setting. What Keith Ellison told me is that that Walz, kind of feeds off crowds. You know what I mean? Like some people, they can be overwhelmed. Some people really go with it. So we may tonight see the arrival of a new superstar in our politics. And I don't say that casually. I mean, he may not make it. It may not happen. But this could be a very, very big deal night in our politics.
What will he have to do to accomplish that?
He's got to, it's well understood that he's a nice guy, right? And it's well understood that he is, easygoing. He can handle what's thrown at him. That image is there. He's also got an ability, as we know, to go to a kind of a poignant side. He's talked about IVF, his family, you know, having to rely on IVF and the importance of that. And I think it's, so he knows how to kind of frame issues. So I think what you got to get tonight, and we'll see if he does it. This is a complex thing. Can he really prosecute Trump? Because that's the job of vice presidential candidate. Your primary job is not to advance the ticket. That's the president does that.
You're the attack dog.
You're the prosecutor. So can he really prosecute Trump and Vance and in a deeper way, not just a good hit, but something deeper? And then the second thing is that I think that it's a nuance of the vice presidency, but you do have to show that, if it fell to you, you could do it. And so he's going to have a little policy riff there and a little, kind of a I do know how to run things sort of riff. I think he could play it off Minnesota and do quite fine with it. But that's a lot of moving parts all at once. If he pulls it off, we'll know, right? You'll have a sense of it. It won't just be that the crowd cheers. You'll have that feel. And that's a pretty remarkable thing. We don't get that too often in politics. And people have blown it in the past. Plenty of folks have gotten to that place and not made it. So that's the drama of tonight. Clinton will do fine. He'll give a good speech. Other people will do fine as well.
So let me ask you, because this really is, these are glorified pep rallies.
No kidding.
And so, we saw, we were at the Republican convention, and as I was watching that, and I was watching how excited people were, and they talked about the bounce and how big the bounce would be. But we saw that dissipate.
It dissipated immediately.
So while we're looking and watching all of this, and we're watching the great speakers, I mean, when you can trot out Joe Biden and his wife and Jill, and then trot out the Obamas, and then trot out Clinton and his wife. You're in rarefied air.
Well, one thing I'll tell you is, the only former Democratic president who isn't here is Jimmy Carter, and he doesn't travel much these days. It's pretty amazing the crew they've got. But let me offer you this one notion here that at a convention, we're talking about tonight. Tonight's right. Going to be a big deal with Walz. But at a convention, in the end, you have the presidential candidate speak, and then kind of everything falls away. You know, you collect all the souvenirs right along the way if you're like me, and you're like, oh, I'll get that poster and I got to see all this. And then suddenly you're there at that final point, and it's sort of like getting married after all your years of dating or something like that, then saying, oh, wow, I've reached this point that really matters. And it's a big deal because that's what we're building toward. At the Republican convention, that was also what they were building toward. And the weirdest part was they had a mildly successful convention.
Yeah,
it wasn't a bad convention. It was well organized. You were there, Dan.
Absolutely.
It was pretty well organized.
It was
right?
well organized. And I think there was a lot of unity around the candidate, especially in the immediate wake of the assassination attempt.
It felt
as well.
Better. It felt like even if you didn't agree with these people, it felt like, well, you know, they kind of know how to do what they're doing. And then Trump gets up there and he literally, you know,
that's just what he does.
Destroys the whole mood. And the weird part was it was partially that he spoke for like 6 days. But beyond that.
The longest convention speech, I think, in modern political
history.
You're
totally right.
And delivered,
And 93 minutes.
That's right. Yeah.
Timed out initially in the writing to be a 30-minute speech. So he added an hour and some on. And it was so bad, so horrible. I remember writing that night, and I'm sure you had to rewrite your piece that night because we all were like, wow, this is made way worse than we thought. It was so bad that I wrote, you know, anybody who thought that, you know, Trump was unbeatable should really listen again to his speech because that is a very beatable speech. And then, of course, the Democrats trumped him with, you know, Biden stands down, Harris stands up, everything of history since then. Here, the Republicans, all they got in their, you know, quiver at the moment is they're going to apparently get Bobby Kennedy Jr. to stand down on Friday and so this is the thing. I just was getting this. You may have heard more, Dan, because Dan is a brilliant reporter. But initially we're hearing Kennedy's going to stand down. He's going to endorse Trump. I heard right before we came on that his wife has apparently put the card down and said, no, this household isn't going to endorse Donald Trump. So the drama will not be something that helps the Republicans. Likely the drama is just stupid drama that doesn't much matter.
I can't help but notice that you don't have a wedding ring on. So
I am married.
Okay. So I was about to say, well, we'll see if the wife wins out.
The wife always wins out in my house.
Well, that's why I was
just to be sure of that.
That's why I was presenting it to you.
I don't wear the ring because it's, you know, I'm not competent. No, it's nothing of that. No. I'm not competent to keep even a piece of jewelry.
No, I was just saying it because normally, you know, the wife has an awful lot of say. And swaying things. I don't know in this instance.
It's at the 100% in our household.
I don't know if in this instance that'll be the case.
Oh, we shall see.
All right.
You know, I will tell you this. Yeah, it's a Kennedy versus a Hollywood star.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of them could get, might not be so good for her career.
Let's bring it back to Tim Walz and Dan Schaefer. The easy job for Tim Walz tonight is to speak to Democrats. I think the harder job he has tonight is to speak to the undecided voter. What does he have to say to convince that person?
Yeah, I think it's part of it is a policy argument. I think because Minnesota, they have a story to tell there about what they've been able to accomplish with a one-seat Democratic majority in their state legislature. They were able to pass all sorts of really progressive legislation. And I think At this moment, you know, we're talking about, you know, the type of policies that Kamala Harris is rolling out and what have you. I think what happened in Minnesota under Tim Walz's leadership can be a platform that they can bring nationally. And I think I was at this roundtable this afternoon with a number of state legislative leaders. Minority Leader Greta Neubauer from Wisconsin was there. State Senator Mallory McMorrow from Michigan was there. And they both talked about what Minnesota was able to accomplish on reproductive rights, on LGBTQ rights, on all sorts of progressive economic policies. We know the big, you know, free school lunches that Tim Walz championed in Minnesota. I think there's a real policy platform there that Walz can introduce to the nation. And like John was saying, you know, in many ways, this is an introduction for Walz to the country because he is so new to the national stage. And I think he can bring out those policy chops. And, you know, I'll tell a little bit of a story about a friend of mine. So my college roommate is a political moderate, basically hates both parties, moved to St. Paul within the past few years. He loves Tim Walz. He doesn't particularly lean too far to the left or to the right or anything. He loves Tim Walz because he actually gets things done. He might not 100% agree with, you know, every last policy. It might be a little bit to the left for him. But I think that is a really interesting story to mm-hmm. tell, too, that he's a doer, that he's going to get things done as he did in Minnesota. And I think that that's the type of thing that they can bring to a message at a convention like this, talking about like, if we get the Senate, if we get the House, we can really move. And that's what they did in Minnesota.
And as much mm-hmm. as four people like us love to talk about policy, aren't presidential races really run on personality and, you know, the proverbial person you'd like to have a beer with? And wouldn't it seem that Tim Walz is winning that debate?
Well, he wins the beer, doesn't he?
Or, definitely don't want to have a beer with J.D. Vance. Yeah. Might put something in your drink.
No, I don't think that. I think it's more like he'd write about it and make up stuff about, you know, like what you do when you're, and, you know, like, it's like his book. But, I think it's less have a beer. Honestly, I do. We evolve as people, right? We learn new ways to analyze things. And I think we've ended up with a series of presidents who were complicating and, you know, we got different, we learned things about them that didn't necessarily fit. Like George W. Bush was probably the best guy to have a beer with, period. Well, they didn't drink beer, but he's a very genial guy, really tried to make things work. And then he went and put us in Iraq. And so I think we're as a people, we're sort of starting to figure out maybe the person who puts himself over well might not be the answer. And so I do think we're more ideological. I think we're more partisan. And in this point, I think that the game is less about the swing voter, although Dan told a very good story about it. This friend is sort of, you know, up in there. But it's less about the swing voter than it is the likely voter that you get to the polls, right? And this, I say the likely person to vote for you that you get to the polls, but may not be a likely voter in and of themselves. So it's more a mobilization thing. And I think that's what Walz is, what you're going to see with Walz. He, I think, will accept that he may not convince everybody, but that he's going to have a message that's aimed very, very hard at mobilizing a lot of people who kind of are, you know, likely Democratic voters if they come out. Where do those people live? A lot of them actually live in rural areas. It's a very interesting thing. There are a lot of rural Democrats, but they feel like they've been beaten down for so long. They gerrymandering, things like that, that you write about so very well. And so at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of people out there who want to, you know, they'd like to see a banner carrier, somebody to step up and say, hey, let's do this.
Well, they want the happy warrior, right?
Yeah, and I think that's right.
What,
you said it.
That's what Tim Walz, I think, needs to be in this speech. He needs to be the happy warrior. And I think they've really leaned into the joy of this campaign. And I think that, and leaning into Walz's, you know, Midwestern sensibilities. We heard the other day the whole thing where he, you know, the spiciest thing he puts on his taco is black pepper or whatever, right?
That,
so all that kind of stuff. But I think that creates, you know, the overall image of the joy of this campaign, the happy warrior. And I think that's what, you know, we should be expecting from Walz tonight.
So let me ask you guys, because living in the city of Milwaukee and watching what Joe Biden was attempting to do, during the time he was running, and that's realizing the importance of the black vote.
Yeah.
The fact that Kamala Harris has constantly been in Milwaukee, the fact that Joe Biden was there when she was the vice president, they understand how critically important the black vote is. Mm-hmm. They saw what happened with Mandela Barnes, a guy who was within a whisker of becoming a United States Senator, and they wound up with
Ron Johnson.
And so I think in many instances outside of the Democratic Party itself, people are taking for granted and not understanding the value of the black vote, especially in the city of Milwaukee.
I think you're right. And I think that this is what I was getting to a moment ago when I was talking about this notion of mobilization, right? That, you know, for so long there was this thing of, oh, we're going to go find the swing voter. And so you get in your car, you know, you pack up, you know, get the trunk full, get some, you know, get a lot of drinks to go, and you drive out across America looking for the swing voter. And after about like 6-8 days, and you haven't found him, what you realize is most people are pretty well, they're one way or the other,
right?
And so then the question is, instead of looking for the proverbial swing voter, maybe what you ought to do is stay home, look at the person down the street or across town who actually is, you know, likely to vote with you if they come to the polls and if they're excited. And, you know, what I think has really not happened is, you know, there's been a gap there. I don't think it's going to be there this time, though, I think, because I actually believe Kamala Harris recognizes where to go and find the swing
voters. We have much more to talk about, and we'll get right to it after we take care of some business. You're listening to DNC coverage on Civic Media.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbald Show.
Most of us can agree everyone deserves the right to make their own medical decisions. Politicians should have no say at all. Thankfully, we have leaders like Vice President Kamala Harris who are standing up for our rights to make our own medical decisions and protect abortion rights. As Vice President, Kamala Harris helped lead the administration's efforts to protect abortion rights after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Vice President Harris has worked to defend access to emergency medical care and support the ability to travel for reproductive care. She's fought for access to high-quality, affordable contraception and strengthened reproductive health privacy. Vice President Harris has defended our rights and freedoms against right-wing extremists who want the government to make medical decisions for us. She's a champion for our rights.
Visit www.abwt.org/Kamala and tell Vice President Harris, keep fighting for our freedom to make our own medical decisions. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. You're listening to a Civic Media News special report. Everything you need to know from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Once again, your host, Civic Media News Director, Terry Bell.
And welcome back. It's difficult to be at a Democratic National Convention in Chicago without mentioning protests that are happening. As in 1968, they're happening this year. There was a large demonstration last night that ended in several arrests, including three of journalists. And more protests today. Thousands gathered in support of ending U.S. funding to Israel. They had prayers, demonstrations, many speakers. Free Palestine was a prominent chat. Probably most notably, protesters managed to disrupt Stephen Colbert's talk show last night on network television. So it's they've made their presence known, and it's really hard to be here in Chicago and not talk about the impact that they're having.
Yeah, I think it's been interesting to see, I think before the convention, I think there was a lot of expectations that there's going to be, these tens of thousands of protesters flooding the streets of Chicago.
It wasn't that.
It didn't materialize in that way. Perhaps it would have been, had the change at the top of the ticket not happened. But I think because of the change, I think there's a lot more unity within the Democratic Party, unity on the left around Kamala Harris. But I think it is also important that, we have people out protesting on issues that they care about. Obviously, the war in Gaza is a big one. It's going to be really important for the Kamala Harris campaign to stake out a clear position on what they're seeking in terms of policy right now. But I think I think it is also important that by and large, like you said, there's a couple of risks, things happening, but by and large, these protests have been peaceful. And I think that in the wake of the, assassination attempt last month, the protests were peaceful in Milwaukee and most of the protests here in Chicago have been such as well.
And I think there's a reason for that. I think as Dan points out, it's a very dramatic and intense time. We're being whipsawed all over the place. And so I think that does have an impact on how people think about stuff. But the passion on Gaza has also, it's been both inside and outside the hall, right? And this is an important thing to understand. The Democrats have not gotten Gaza right. They haven't figured it out yet. That's an important thing to say. But at least they're acknowledging it. The Republican convention, you had nothing even comparable. Here you had the protests outside, but then at the inside you had the uncommitted delegates who were raising this issue. You also had, amazingly enough, Joe Biden gets up there and says, there's demonstrators out in the streets and they've actually, they got a point. This killing should stop. Now, many of them say, yeah, but Biden, you could do more. I agree. I think he could. But then you have AOC mention it. Then you had last night Bernie Sanders call for an immediate ceasefire from the stage, get a very loud applause because 81% of Democrats favor a ceasefire. And then tonight, as we were on, we all play with our phones when we should be listening to other people. But Keith Ellison got up there, Attorney General of Minnesota, tremendous figure in our politics, and called for a ceasefire from the stage. And apparently there was a loud, burst there. So what I'm telling you is that shouldn't be satisfying if you want to stop the genocide in Gaza, if you want to stop the killing. That shouldn't be satisfying that you just get mentioned. However, if you do get mentioned, you have a sense that you might get to the next place. And I think that has had some dissipating effect on in making this less of a upended convention than you saw, say, in 68 or something like that.
Yeah, and I think some of those speakers that you talked about, like Sanders last night, they cracked the door open to have a broader conversation,
right.
I think, about this within the Democratic Party, instead of just kind of like pushing it away into the corner. We don't want to talk about this, whatever it might be.
What are you talking about?
You got to have the conversation. And you got to get in there and really figure out the best path forward.
Well, it's been going on for a year. So they can't hide it. It's been going on for a year, and clearly, when you're supplying the weapons, that killing the people, you've got to answer to that.
And when you have a lot of most young Americans who get their information from the phone, or from the social media feeds, they've seen so many images of death and destruction that it has affected our politics, and so. This is a great question. We're discussing it in very sound ways here. But then we have to think about this next stage here. It's tomorrow night. Two things. One, there has been a plea that a Palestinian be allowed to speak from the stage. They have some very Palestinian elected officials, Palestinian-American elected officials, very moderate folks. There has been a plea for that. It would be interesting to see if there's a response. Ellison did mention tonight. Then there is also the deeper issue, and that is, what will Kamala Harris say? I don't expect her to devote her speech in some lengthy way to Gaza, but will there be a few lines there?
And
what I agree with you. And what will she say, and how will she say it? This could be a profoundly significant moment. Remember, 1968, Hubert Humphrey didn't say it.
Right.
And he didn't get elected.
President Biden has said he wants to, negotiate an end to the war before he leaves office. And it sounds like there's things that could be said from the podium tonight and tomorrow night that could get us there.
Could help. And then one other thing, too, I'll throw in the mix, is that I've reported a lot in Israel and Palestine. I've spent a good part of my life there. And as a reporter, to understand, I have not lived there. But what I can tell you is Bibi Netanyahu watches politics more closely than any of us ever will, even Dan, who's really good at it. And so what I'm going to tell you is this guy is watching politics closely. He's watching the polls from America. I think he understands the possibility that Kamala Harris could be elected president and that it won't be Trump, his buddy. It could be somebody else. That could influence ceasefire negotiations because Netanyahu may think, wow, you know what? I better keep myself in the circle of discussion here because if he loses that, that has profound domestic political impact on him and Israel. Don't want to make it too complicated. Bottom line is, Kamala Harris's very successful campaign so far is actually already, I think, influencing foreign policy, and sometimes in some good ways.
Well, that's an excellent point, because we've seen our international relations under Donald Trump. I think a lot of heads of states don't want to go back there. So I think they're very interested, obviously, in what's happening here and what's being said here in Chicago this week.
Yeah, I think, and also being, just part of that international community. And I think that's been a good part of the Biden administration's foreign policy as well. And so, how to come to the table instead of just, the America First platform, which really just ultimately amounts to America alone.
Yeah.
So we have just a couple of more nights of this convention. what is it that you have not seen yet, maybe, that you would like to see?
I think part of it is, I think tonight we're going to see a lot a focus on the Midwest. And I think the focus on the Midwest is really important. We know the key battleground states are Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania in so many ways. And so I think putting, those front and center with Tim Walz is going to be really important. And it's going to be interesting to see how that resonates here in this Midwestern town in Chicago in the days to come.
The hour flew by. John Nichols, Dan Schaefer, Earl Ingram of the Earl Ingram Show, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Our special thanks to Aaron Zommers, Chris Casper, and Corey Hartman for their help behind the scenes. I'm Terry Bell of Civic Media News. You've been listening to special coverage of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Thanks for being with us.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Crude and Dom. Tune in Thursday, final day of DNC coverage. Tonight is Kamala Harris's night. The Devil's Advocates will take you live to the United Center. You gotta listen.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. Your news just for the Superior area. I'm James Kelly with WBZH News.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.